overeducated, underskilled. Maybe it's the other way around, I forget. And I'm obsolete. I'm not economically viable.
Welcome to the podcast of post-modern madness and societal decay. Not economically viable. With your entropy coordinator and spirit guide, Jay Swift.
Greetings once more, dear listeners slash viewers. This is your host, Jay Swift, and you're officially knee-deep in the second episode of Not Economically Viable, the podcast-slash-vodcast of post-postmodern madness and societal decay. Our inaugural episode with Jim Goad was a rousing success, so much so that within 24 hours, it had already maxed out the bandwidth on our podcasting accounts. With that in mind, I suppose now is a good time to remind everyone that each and every episode of Not Economically Viable is published under Creative Commons licensing, which means any of you are free to download it or tape it off your computer like it was a radio station in the 1980s and just let the free information therein float around on the interwebs free of charge and sans any threats of copyright retaliation on my part. Also, you can find every episode of Not Economically Viable online at youtube.com/user/jswiftmedia, and then you can use some tertiary app on the net to download and listen to it that way. Anywho, we've got a really interesting guy on the slate for today's episode. I recently caught up with Anthony Jones, a San Diegan who made a documentary movie a few years back called Evil Law, which takes an in-depth look at sex offender registration laws, some of which he considers severely overbroad, brazenly unconstitutional, and quite possibly a basis for the federal government to vastly expand its power over all U.S. citizens. Well, how about we let Mr. Jones explain it himself and jump directly into the thick of things, huh? So this is Jay Swift, as always, with Not Economically Viable, and today we have a very special guest on the program, all the way from San Diego. It is Anthony Jones, the director of Evil Law, who's also written a lot of other material about sexual offender registration in the U.S. So I'll just throw it to you and let you introduce yourself. You know, tell us about what you do and how you got into the field of registered sex offender laws and penalties.
Well, let me throw a disclaimer here real quick, because anytime you mention the word, I'll just use the abbreviation XO, okay, standing for sex offender. People weird out, you're a defender, or you're an apologist for child molesters, dangerous, predatory, sexual persons types. Well, I'm not. These people should have been castrated, locked up, and put in prison, and the keys thrown away, so... Anybody tries to put that label on me, sorry, pal. What I do is I am a researcher of, we're going to use abbreviations, it's much easier, of the SOR, Sex Offender Registry. I research and investigate the SOR itself, not basically who's on it. I mean, what's going on with the SOR? Okay, does that answer some questions?
No, absolutely. And do you have a degree in this research, or is it just something you kind of appointed yourself on?
Well, you know, this is really going to, like I said, how I got in this field of investigation. I wrote a book on it. It actually became a best-selling book. So this is how I got involved in investigating the SOR. I'm retired. I was a private investigator for about 40 years in my 60s. I live on a sailboat on the San Diego Bay. Don't pay any rent. Life is beautiful, okay? So, one day, two clients of mine, came to my boat with two teenagers. And I could take one look at their face that something was wrong. And I said, well, okay, guys, you should come aboard, have a seat. Here's some wine. Well, what's going on? Both of their teenagers, one was, I just call them Beaver, another one was Gidget, were on the sex offender registry. They were sex offenders. I said, what? Is this a joke or something? Man, we haven't hit the wine yet, man. What had happened with these two teens was Beaver turned 18, and he got the family Harrier, which was an old 1960s hippie VW bus. Went to a beach in California with his girlfriend. She was 17. And they did the wild thing. They got, you know, smoking weed, drinking beer, and playing music, Doors music, and did the wild thing. Okay, that was very common back in the 60s, early 70s. They got busted. She got busted for indecent exposure in public. In California, indecent exposure in public can get you on the SOR. I wish I were making this up. I mean, well, here's where I got involved. What the parents find out was, number one, the kids couldn't live in their homes because they were under jurisdiction of Jessica's Law, which is a law where if you're on the SOR, you can't live within so many thousand feet of a school or a daycare or a nursery or a church or even a Toys R Us. So the kids had to move. It's unbelievable. So the parents, they got married, and the parents started paying for an apartment for them. And next thing you know, vigilantes are throwing rocks at their apartment, die. You know, they couldn't find any place to live. They couldn't get jobs. They couldn't, they're basically banned and outcast from society. I mean, I wish I were making this up. I don't make this up. Then a serial killer started stalking them. There was a serial killer on the West Coast. It was going up and down the West Coast. And he'd go on these, these Megan's Public Law website and choose his victim. Oh, I like this guy here. I think I'll just go kill him. He'd track him down off their Megan's Law Public Law and in fact, kill him. Really murder him. So the parents, now I've got these two teenagers on my boat here, and the parents are begging me, please, save our children. Understand, when you're on the SOR, you're basically living in a police force. You have registration rules and regulations you have to follow. You violate one of these rules and regulations, then you're arrested and you go to prison. You go to jail for violating the regulations. So technically, in California, I had a case where a guy was on the SOR for public urination, and he spent almost 10 years in prison because he kept violating his laws, regulations. Like, you know, when you're on this thing, you have to verify, well, where you live, where you work, what kind of car you drive, where are you going? I mean, it's something out of Nazi Germany. Violate all these rules, you go to prison. So I had to figure out how to get these people off of the Megan's Law public website. So I finally figured out how to do that. It took me about 6 months to figure out how to legally circumvent all the SOR Megan's Law website rules and regulations to get them off of the public website. Okay. Well, in the process, I wrote a book about it. It's called An American Horror Love Story. It's you can Google it. Well, a Jew who survived Nazi Germany, Shlomo Goldstein, read this book and said, "My God, my great-great-grandson, Jason, who was on the SOR for doing the wild thing with his girlfriend, was on it." And I met with Shlomo. First of all, I thought it was a joke. I mean, a sex offender being in a time parallel with a Jew in Nazi Germany short of a gas chamber. I mean, that's kind of a weird out. So him and I sat in front of two computers. I was on one side of the computer, and he was on the other side of the computer. And first thing he would do is he would go to the Jewish National Holocaust Museum. Go check out that website. It's got all the documentations of what the Jews had to go through Nazi Germany with pictures and images and explanations. First thing he clicked was I had to have a Jew, a letter, a sticker on the door of my house saying that a Jew lived here. Okay, my side, Megan's Law, the public website. And they dropped down. I had to have Jew on my driver's license. My side, that's a center on driver's license and passports. We just kept going down the line. And I'm going, my God, what is this? You know, number five, Jews, you know, vigilante, Jews being murdered at random. Dropped on my side. Last year, there were 400 SOs that were murdered by vigilantes. So we just kept dropping and dropping and dropping. And that's where the Evil Law documentary came from. But what was really scary was that he dropped down to the People's Court in Nazi Germany if you committed a political crime or something politically or socially incorrect. You didn't go to a regular legal court. You went to a People's Court where judgment or sentence was passed on you. You couldn't make bond. And you couldn't appeal it. Well, if an SO violates one of his regulations of being on the sex offender registry, he's brought before a People's Court. I mean, he doesn't go to a regular court. He goes in front of a judge. He's allowed an attorney, but there's no bond. There's no jury. There's no appeal. I mean, the parallels are just incredible. Well, you mentioned about there's a $10,000 reward if anybody can disprove the documentation on this film. Once the film was produced, Shlomo took it to the Jewish National Holocaust Museum and tried to get it shown there. He actually wanted this entered as documentation that what was happening in the National Holocaust Museum was actually happening in America. And they saw one look at this, and they say, "Oh, I'm being sued. The National Jewish Holocaust Museum is suing me for using their documentation." Understand, you go on their website, everything is copyrighted. So I use copyright, and all the films on Shlomo's site are from the Jewish Holocaust National Museum. So I met the director. I said, "I love it. I want to go to court. Let's get this in front of a jury. I can't wait." Well, long story short, they dropped the charges. They didn't want this for the jury. Okay. Anyway, so I'll have some questions. This is what's going on with
me. All right, absolutely. And I guess, before we kind of get into some of the more granular details of what's going on as far as registration is concerned in the U.S., we really need to kind of iron out for people who may not be familiar with registration techniques. Basically, what the federal law is. I mean, going back to the Jacob Wetterling Act of 1994, what did that do on the national level as far as sexual offender registration? How did that change state laws?
Well, as someone who studied this astutely, trying to figure out how to get these kids loopholes around it, well, long story short, early 90s, some guy kidnaps a 10-year-old boy. The boy disappears. Nobody knows what happens. Okay, the parents, go to their senators, and long story short, they pass a law that if you are a dangerous, predatory, sexual offender type, then you have to register with the police. It starts off at one state, and then it spread like cancer. Then all the states got it, and then, of course, Congress passed a law saying that all the states have to enact this. Okay. I agree with it. It was a good law. I mean, if there's a real sicko running around in society, we need to need to keep tabs on this guy. So this is where it started. Okay, where it really snowballed was when Megan's Law would pass. Let me tell you what Megan's Law is. Okay, I've done a lot of research on this. You can Google it yourself. 1996, a woman named Maureen Kanga lives in New Jersey. I mean, I hate to say this, but I'm just going to take the gloves off. She was a low-life alcoholic, and she had her daughter go out and sell Girl Scout cookies door-to-door to get money to buy her some booze. Now, think about this. She got a 9-year-old girl. Her name was Megan. The mother orders her to go out in the neighborhood, knock on doors, and sell money for the Girl Scout tickets so she can buy some booze. Unfortunately, may she rest in peace. I still feel bad about this. Oh, my God, this must have been horrible. She knocked on the wrong door. A 9-year-old girl in a neighborhood knocking on doors, knocks on the wrong door, and the guy, the sicko, pulls her in, rapes her and murders her. Okay. Once the police found out what had happened, the neighborhood or the city was in an uproar, and they were going to charge Maureen Kanka, Megan's mother, with child endangerment and accessory to second-degree murder. I mean, they were really hot about this. The city was hot about what this mother had done to her daughter. Well, what happened next was her defense was, she got a slip lawyer, her defense was, it was not my fault this happened. It was the government's fault. The government should have told me that this sicko lived in my neighborhood. Had I known the sicko lived in my neighborhood, then I would have told my daughter, don't knock on this guy's door. So that is how Megan's Law was started. Okay. If you'll notice today, at one time, I'm in my 60s. I'm sure a lot of people remember when Girl Scouts went out in neighborhoods and knocked on doors and sold cookies. Girl Scout cookies. That doesn't happen anymore. Now you see them in a group with, you know, with supervisors selling the Girl Scout cookies at like stores, in public places now, Walmarts, Kmarts, Targets, that kind of stuff. So that's how the Jacob Wehling Law started, and that's how Megan's Law started. Long story short, about a year ago, some guy in prison confessed to kidnapping young Jacob, and there was nothing sexually involved. He was just a serial killer. Just wanted to kill a kid.
And
so, all right, so ask away.
Yeah, absolutely. And after that, one of the interesting developments is 10 years after Megan's Law came on board, we had the Adam Walsh Child Protection and Safety Act come along in 2006. And what that did was create a 3-tier system for those who are SOs in terms of registration requirements. And can you tell us about the 3 tiers? You know, what qualifies for a Tier 1 offense, that which requires about 15 years on the registration?
Okay, well, listen, I'm probably going to be very unpopular with a lot of your listening audiences. Number one, Bill Clinton could be on the SOR. As a matter of fact, there's a petition to get him on it. Okay, he's the one who signed Megan's Law into law. Adam Walsh could actually be on the SOR because there's a video of him saying he met his future wife when she was 17 years old, and he basically said, we did the wild thing. All right, okay. So now let's get out of the tiers. Tier 1. It's basically, you know, public nudity, public ashing, mooning, streaking, skin dipping, you know, still, I mean, silly kids horseplay with dicks and penises, you know, stupid stuff. Okay, no longer stupid anymore. Sex things were, if these cell phones would have been around when I was a teenager, I would have been doing this. You know, some 13-year-old teen boy would take a picture of his you-know-what and send it to his girlfriend. I mean, that kind of stuff, sex, any type of pornographic information transmitted over cell phone, sexting. There was a case where you can YouTube this, okay? People who read that one say this. There's actually a case where a 14-year-old girl took off her clothes and put it on her Facebook page so she can get her boyfriend, and she got arrested for distribution of child pornography. Okay, so that's level one. Basically, all the silly, stupid stuff. Okay, then you get in the level, then you drop down to tier two. This is at one time in this country we had something called statutory rape. I know because I was charged with statutory rape. I was 16, she was 14. Got caught in a wild thing in the past. Got shit faced about it. I went from the judge. The judge looked at her and said, "Did he force you?" No. You love her? Yes. Do you plan on getting married one day? She said, yes. I said, yes. He said, okay, get out of here. Bye-bye. Have a nice life. So a judge would make the decision if she had consensual sex underage. It was a force, was a rape, was a love, you want to get married, you know, and, yeah, it makes sense. And generally what would happen on a statutory rape, it could either be a fine or a jail, you know, slap on the wrist or don't do it again, or I hope you get married and have a happy life, you know. Now there's no statutory rape. You go on the registry. I mean, there's cases of people, guys who are 18, are on the registry. Plenty of them. They're on a registry, and they're married to the woman that they molested. Okay, tell me what sense does this make? And then they're caught up, but they can't go to a school to pick up their kids. I mean, all the full brunt of Megan's Law falls upon them, even though they're married to their so-called victim. Level two, Romeo and Juliet romances, school teacher, you know, high school kid, you know, once again, the dream of every high school boy is to get it on with a hot teacher. Okay, one time, it was frowned upon. It was, well, don't do it again. Okay, well, this is unacceptable. Now, boom, you're on the registry. So level two is basically socially and politically incorrect relationships, which is the laughing stock of the world. Understand that age of consent in Europe is 16, South America, Mexico, 13, Asia, 13, Middle East, there is no age of consent. You can marry a one-year-old baby in Muslim countries. Russian Republic, Federal Republic, like Hungary, all these countries at one time were part of the Soviet bloc. There was 14. Africa, 13. So technically, the whole world could be on the American SOR. Does this make any sense?
Okay. Oh, of course.
All right, now we drop down to level three. Level three, now this is what the law was really intended for. Somebody who is a dangerous, predatory child molester. But what has happened, it's really far out. Now, if you're 18 and she's 14, well, you can be labeled. It just morphed away from what it really was. This whole pure thing. Basically, what has happened is America's puritanical past is now ruling from the grave. I mean, a lot of these American sex laws. I mean, they're so out of touch, out of date with the rest of the world. My thinking was, if somebody, what should have happened? Instead of having an SOR, if somebody got caught doing something that was incorrect, politically or socially incorrect, it should have been turned over to the psychiatric, to the mental health bureau. They should have been labeled sexually deficient or sexually defunct or something like that. I mean, the mental health professional should have got involved with this. If you had to put somebody on a public website, it should have been, this is so-and-so, he's under treatment, his doctor is this, he's doing good treatment. It should have been a mental health issue. Whereas when they turned it over to the Department of Justice and made it a criminal act under the jurisdiction of the police, well, this didn't solve any problem. I mean, basically, the police can only react after a crime has been committed. Whereas if somebody's under the care and jurisdiction of a mental health professional or a psychiatrist, well, this guy can get into his mind and get a feel of what's going on. A good example was, there was a case in California, the name escapes me, where the guy kidnaps a 10-year-old girl, took her to his house, and she was a sex slave for like 15 years, they had three kids, he was on the registry, and they would visit his house, he made reports, I mean, he was doing everything he's supposed to do, but yet he had a teenage girl held captive in his backyard as a sex slave, had babies with her. So, had he done it because of a mental health professional, he could have spotted that out. That's what I'm saying, this whole thing. The whole thing should have been turned over to the mental health profession, instead of the criminal. The exception may be violent rape. I mean, any rape is a form of violence. That should have been criminal. But all this other stuff, the Department of Justice statistics show that 95% of all child molestations occur between someone the child knows and trusts. And stranger danger represents like less than 3 or 4%. Okay? According to the SOR and registering that crowd, it's reversed. 90% of all child molestings are stranger dangers. Okay, it just recently reversed. All right, keep moving on. Next question here.
And one of the very interesting components of the 2006 law, it actually has a provision where you can actually be civilly committed not only without a trial, but also without having committed a crime. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, if anybody's ever read the book George Orwell's 1984, and this is strictly out of George Orwell's 1984, one thing that's not really noticed or really written about in George Orwell's 1984 is that the sex police. I mean, basically, his whole book is about the illegal sexual contact with a woman that the state had justified or okayed. That's 1984. George Orwell's 1984, and the sex police are here. And 2 + 2 = 5 is here. Well, what should happen in a case like that is, you know, I have a brother-in-law who's a psychiatrist. Okay, if he were to tell me, hey, listen, man, this guy's dangerous, and this guy really needs to be locked up, I would go along with him. But if I have a cop say, yeah, well, this guy's dangerous, this guy needs to be locked up, well, we need to have some documentation, we need to have some information. We need to have psychological reports, you know. Understand, I'm back to evil law. That's what they did in Nazi Germany. They just, instead of civil commitment, it was called concentration camps. If they didn't like you, or if they thought they didn't like you, they just put you in a concentration camp. You had no legal process, due process. Okay, cop, get in the stand. We're taking you to a concentration camp. When you're going to get out, well, I don't know. Okay, so... dangerous slippery slopes here. I don't know. In the book, Shlomo says that Shlomo Goldstein. He said that this Megas, this whole SOR thing, the registering people. He said this is how Hitler took down Germany. Basically, when you put somebody on a registration in a democratic constitutional society, you're basically taking them out of the constitutional protection zone and putting them in a government protection zone. You might have is this coming out right, or am I making any sense?
Oh, of course. And one of the things I notice is when you look at the major three laws that came into the U.S., each one added a new component to sexual offender registration. Now, obviously, with the Wetterling Law, you had registration as a requirement. Then with Megan's Law, you had notification. And what Adam Walsh, that law did, was it added a third wrinkle, and that is monitoring of sexual offenders. So can you tell us a bit more about how that's changed over the last couple of years? You know, what are they doing now for people who are on registries like this as far as, you know, surveillance and other things?
Well, what to do with surveillance here? Well, let me asked me the question about expanding the law, what can get somebody on this registry. Okay. You have to understand that the government, and I'm starting to see this, and I'm starting to get more into it. And I'm not anti-government, okay? I'm a libertarian. We need government, okay? Not a habit. What I'm saying is that you have to understand that governments get their money from the people. I mean, they don't make any products. They don't cut records. They don't make cars. I mean, you know, they don't build houses. The only thing they do is they provide a service, and they say, hey, we're providing this service, and we need your money, taxpayer money, to fund this service. The government, whether it be state, city, or federal, or local, what they're doing is, if there is a socially, politically incorrect problem, they're thinking, well, we can throw money at it to try to solve the problem, or we can try to monetize it. Understand this word, monetize. You're making money off of a problem. States take in roughly $40,000 for every person that they put on the SOR. They get that from the federal government. Plus, they get money from the states and the cities. Understand, it takes money and manpower to put somebody on a registry. Meaning, then you have the internet and website infrastructure. That takes money. Of course, law enforcement is probably the big bike. You got to have law enforcement go up the guy's house, say, hi, are you Harry? Are you with here? Okay, thank you. Goodbye. Have a nice day. They go to your job. And it takes money to monitor and surveil someone. And, of course, it's a moneymaker. I mean, putting somebody on the registry for public urination, hey, this is a cash cow. Yeah, now you've got $40,000 a year for a guy that's drunk and pissed in public. Okay. So they're always lowering the bar. Probably what will happen, probably about next year, you'll be calling me, wanting to know about the fourth tier that's coming. There's a fourth tier, there's three tiers now. Now there's a fourth one. They're already doing it in California. Like they're doing it in California, and it's going to spread. You know, as monkey see, monkey do. If you are applying for a job to work in a daycare center, anything with children, or a teacher with children, you have to take, you know, I can't pronounce this. I still can't pronounce it. I'll just explain what it is. It's called a phlebotomy. polygraph test. That's where they're going to strap something on your penis or through your vagina. They're going to stick something in the vagina or your rectum, whatever. And they're going to hook up to a polygraph machine, and they're going to show you weird pictures. And basically, they're going to look at the how the needle. They'll show you a picture of a naked baby. Needle goes this way. Then you're what is known as a latent sexual possible offender. It goes this way, well, then you're cool. So if you fail this test, well, you know, they can't arrest you, they can't put you in jail, and they can't put you on the SOR yet. But it would mean that you failed a late sex offender registered test. This would be mandatory. Understand, at one time in this country, fingerprinting was only for hard criminals. Not everybody's fingerprinting. Drug testing was for hard, once they get hard criminals. Not everybody's drug testing. DNA samples, starts off a hard criminal, but it's morphing to everybody's going to have their DNA check. And then, of course, this test, that'll be mandatory, too. Apply for jobs, say, well, I'm not going to have somebody strap something on my genitalia and show me pictures of them. But are you wrong? No problem. No job. Bye-bye. Okay. So get ready for that, folks. It's coming.
Now, have there been any constitutional challenges to some of the requirements of these laws?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there's been a lot of lawsuits filed on it. It actually went to the Supreme Court. And for some reason, what has happened, and I'm seeing this, there's all of them, this Magnus Law, the SOR, this has probably been the most challenging law in the history of the country. I mean, it rivals the laws were filed during the civil rights protest days of the 1960s. What happens is anytime I personally file all these lawsuits. What happens is when you file these lawsuits, the judges or politicians are very leery about being labeled as a child molester lover or a polisher. You're soft on child molestation. So like I say, anytime you hit, like I say, a politician, anybody, they don't want to get that term that I'm soft on child molestation because it's the end of their political or legal career. So they're always going to vote no when the documentation is screaming yes. Good example, good case in point, you're here in San Diego. If you're on the SOR, you cannot get any kind of homeless shelter in the city. Shlomo in the book Evil Law, Shlomo said, yeah, during Nazi Germany, Jews could not get any homeless shelters. And I filed lawsuits on it, the judge would come back with raw insufficient evidence or failure to state claim, meaning he didn't want to pull it, he wouldn't touch it. These laws, they're in direct violation of the Constitution. The Constitution stated that you can't try somebody twice for the same crime. Okay, now what's wrong with this picture? I'm back to the guy that's is on the registry for public urination and has spent almost 10 years in jail. Not for committing any crimes, or not for urinating at home anymore, but for violating his SOR rules and regulations. Okay? And the way the states, you ask a question, I'm going to answer it now. The way the federal government is able to regulate people on the registry across state lines is that people who were on the registry came under a thing called the Interstate Commerce Clause. Are you familiar with that Interstate Commerce Clause? Ring a bell with you a little bit?
Oh, of course.
Okay, well, if you're on this registry, then the federal government is able to regulate you through the Interstate Commerce Clause. You go to one state, you go to this state, you go to that state, you have to register in that state. Now, the way they keep track of everybody, back to Evil Law, Shlomo told me that anytime he had to move or get a new job, he had to go to the stop and say, hi, Heinz, I'm moving over here, and I'm going to be working here now. And he had to carry a registration card. SLs have to have a registration card on them at all times. It's almost that if he didn't have it, he'd be shot or arrested on the spot. SO, same thing, arrested on the spot. And the card has to be constantly updated. So SLs have to do the same thing. And they have to go to another state, they have to go to the local police department or the registry office. But SOs, it's a police department. But a police department, hi, hello, officer, sorry, Fife, I'm leaving, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, okay. Or anytime you buy a car, hi, I just bought a car, okay, cool. I got a new job for this or that, or I'm at a church. You know, you have to remind your whereabouts what you're doing. Shaw might do the same thing. But he had worked at the Gestapo. There's always a local Gestapo office there. Well, this is, once again, scary stuff, slippery slope. So what we have here, trying to get information from SORNA, which is the government agency in Washington State that regulates, and the act, Adam Walsh Act created SORNA. So go on Google and Google SORNA, S-O-R-N-A. Think of this as a government bureaucracy. They use Homeland Security to monitor and track SSOs. I mean, let's say you live in California, you have to register if you're homeless, you have to register every 30 days. If you have a place every year and you disappear, then the sheriff's department in that city contacts SORNA in Washington State and say, hey, Bozo the clown, is left. We don't raise that. Then they contact SORNA. SORNA contacts Homeland Defense. And Homeland Defense is both looking for you. Same thing with Nazi Germany. If you disappear, Gestapo went looking for you. So, slippery slope. And then, like I said, the only crime you've committed is you failed to register with the registration procedures.
Okay, do you have any
parallels? Like I said, I'm back to $10,000 reward. Anybody can prove that the parallels between a Jew in Nazi Germany, short of a gas chamber, versus an SO in America, through the gas chamber. The parallels are scary. I mean, it's just right down the line. The way Shlomo got on, the way Shlomo became a registered person, was it's called the Right Citizenship Act. I've got that in the film, where he says that once that act was filed, he was basically a non-German. Well, under the way Dwelling Act, which is the SOR, you basically are a non-American. I mean, you're basically banned and exiled from American society. You can't get a job. I was just reading a report today where a lot of jobs in America now are requiring that you have to have a license. Like in California, let's say you want to sell cars, you have a license, or you have real estate, a license. A license, you've got to have a license for a lot of jobs now, which is basically a form of registration from the state government. And you're being denied. You're being denied licenses to work. I had a case where someone was denied a license for a commercial driver's license to drive a truck because they were an SOR and they're on it for basically skinny dipping in a pool. Okay, in a hotel room. They came out and they too much to drink and jumped in a hotel room pool at 3 o'clock in the morning, swimming around, laughing, and next thing you know, boom, they're in jail and they're on the registry. Now the guy's home, who loved the couple, they're on both of them, they're both homeless. So yeah, so he asked some more questions here, guy. We keep rolling along.
Yeah, and to date, how many states have complied with SORNA?
It's mandatory. Even Indian reservations. Indian reservations, they even found some American protectors like Puerto Rico or Guam. So if you're under the American flag, you have to report that you're under the jurisdiction of this. Not only are you on the jurisdiction of it, now on the passport, if you're on the registry, you now have S, a big letter S on your passport. Google J on passports in Nazi Germany. Same thing. And I'm getting feedback that a lot of these countries are denying people if they have S on their passports. I mean, if you have S on your passport, you can't go to a lot of countries. They'll say no. And the way you're tracked once you try to leave the country, and let me tell you who monitors you, watches you, and tracks you, leaving the country with a passport called PASS, Interpol. Interpol is now in charge of monitoring you and watching you. Whereas under Nazi Germany, it was Gestapo. And of course, Jews had J on their passport, and there were a lot of countries they couldn't go to. They were basically stuck within their country. So people on the register are now basically stuck in their country. They can't leave. You can't go to Canada. You can't go to Mexico. Or, you know, the only way out is to get on a plane and try to find a country where you can go, which are now far and few between.
And do you have any
the parallels?
And do you have any hard data on the law's impact on recidivism and perhaps some of the economic consequences of people being placed on these registries?
You can Google this. If you Google recidivism of an SO, Department of Justice statistics, not my statistics, not Joe Blow's statistics, the national recidivism rate for SOs, the jumbo, 3.1%. Okay. The next lowest recidivism rate is murder. Meaning somebody murders someone, there's a 2.9% they're going to murder again. Okay. Now, when you compare the recidivism rates for the other crimes like burglary, auto theft, drug dealing, kidnapping, you get up in the 50-67% recidivism rate. Okay. Whereas with the SO, they're treating this, they're basically treated like they're in the 67% recidivism rate. And once again, this doesn't make any sense. Okay. So anyway, go to 3.1, 3.9 recidivism rate. And then most of these times when they do re-offend, It's not rape or sexual violence or this or that. We're back to this socially and politically incorrect. It's some guy or some woman doing the wild thing with somebody underage or on a beach or in a treehouse or at a telephone booth. It's not a violent reoffense. It's just breaking America's logical sex laws.
Yeah, can you give us an example of perhaps someone who's been listed on the registry who was later civilly confined under one of these laws?
Who was on the registry and civilly confined?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, basically what happens there is, once again, I go back to you have to look at sex crimes as a crime, as a mental defect, a mental issue, a mental illness. You have to look at it from that point of view. And, let's say someone's mentally retarded. Okay, they're mentally retarded. Okay, they say, well, we're going to push in prison for 5 years of being mentally retarded. Okay, the guy does 5 years in prison, and you let him out of prison, he's still mentally retarded. Nothing's changed. Okay, if somebody is deemed to be mentally ill, then that person needs to be put in a mental institution. We put criminally insane people, if you're diagnosed as being criminally insane, you go in a mental institution forever. Bye bye. Okay, this is what happens when you don't treat a symptom correctly. It's a mental disorder. Let the mental health department take care of it. If it's a criminal matter, a violent rape. Yeah, I'm gonna draw the line on that. That's violence. Okay, violence. Yeah, then let law enforcement or the legal system take care of it. Okay. An 18-year-old and a 17-year-old doing the wild thing in a Volkswagen, an old 50 van Volkswagen bus on a beach in California, Okay. So civil commitment, if the guy's diagnosed, yes. As long as it's a mental health or psychiatrist doing the diagnosis, not the legal, not a judge, not a prosecutor, not a sheriff.
Hey, makes sense to me. All right, and moving along here, when you look at the issue of sex offenders, I mean, obviously, it does happen. There's been some very, very big stories lately. I mean, for example, just in Los Angeles, earlier this year, you had 28 people, or, well, 28 child slaves rescued from an operation. Operation Rescue in Europe actually found...
How are you doing here?
Oh, can you hear me? Oh, can you hear me? Oh, can you hear me, sir? So I think now you're starting to see why I prefer doing things on Skype.
Okay, come again?
Yeah, this is usually why I do interviews on Skype or on Google Hangouts. You're just less static, and it's...
Well, yeah, I don't want a boat. This is the problem I have. I'm at kind of the mercy of what I have. So. Right. Anyway, did you get my last answer, or did I get cut off before I gave them off?
Yeah, we got that in there.
All right, so what's the next question? Go ahead here.
All right, so moving along, I mean, obviously, you know, sexual offenses happen all the time. I mean, there are some big problems going on. Obviously, in L.A., you had 28 children rescued over this year. You had Operation Rescue in Europe found a 70,000-member-strong, you know, global sex trafficking ring. So if registration and monitoring and notification isn't the solution to that problem, what do you think should be done?
Well, okay, as you were mentioning, like I said, I've always said that you have to look at bats and demons. Either should go to the mental health professionals or should go to law enforcement. Okay. At this point, we don't have that. All the cases go to law enforcement and the legal system. As far as sexual, you know, sex trafficking, yeah, that should go to law enforcement. Okay, so I mean, somebody trying to make money, but pimping out a young girl, yeah, this guy needs to do some serious prison time. Okay. Also, the guy that's paying to have, you know, do the wild thing with a 13, 14, but he needs to do time too. Yeah, this is criminal activity. Okay. That's my calling on it. And a lot of grandstanding here in San Diego, every year they have a thing called Operation Blue Vest. They'll take all the policemen, they'll take fellow officers, U.S. Marshals, and they'll go to all the houses of all the SOs to knock on the door and check them out. Okay, this is just political grandstanding. You know, they understand that it costs a lot of money. I mean, it's multi-billions of dollars a year to monitor these people, and they have to show they're doing their job. They always use the fear factor.
Yeah, and, you know, one thing go ahead.
What we got here?
Yeah, and moving along just a little bit. Can you hear me now, sir?
Yeah, I'm still here. So go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, one of the things you brought up in the documentary that's very interesting is that now we're starting to see states use the model laid out for sex offenders for entirely different kind of registries. So can you give us a couple of examples of the non-sexual offender registry states have opened up since Megan's Law came online?
I want to try again. I didn't quite hear you.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the interesting things you brought up in the documentary is that since Megan's Law has come online, states have actually enacted several new registry laws modeled after Megan's Law and other sex offender registration laws. Can you tell us about those and how they, you know, compare to those? Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, one of the interesting things that you mentioned in the documentary is that many states have actually created new laws and new registries modeled on Megan's Law and other sex offender registries. Can you tell us about some of the things states have been doing outside of sexual offenders in terms of regulating and putting people on registrations?
Okay. Well, you know, Shlomo warned me about this. He explained that in Nazi Germany, it started off with the registration of the Jews first. Yeah, that's how it starts off. Basically, Hitler said, "Well, we have to protect German society from these people because they're a danger to children and people." And of course, we have to take them out of a constitutionally protected zone, and you know, basically, we take away most of the constitutional rights, put them in a not a government protection zone, which is a constitutional zone. And we can do whatever we want with them. All right. So this movie was made, me and Shlomo made this 2 years ago, And the new registries have really sneaked. Slomo said it was going to come because it happened in Germany, but not in Germany. As it stands now, Utah has the financial fraud registry. It was basically for the Bernie Madoffs. So Utah financial fraud registry, not a public website. Tennessee, animal cruelty. Any kind of cruelty to animal cruelty, an animal, once again, registration, public website. New York, terrorist website. That's wide open. And, you know, George Washington could have been considered a terrorist. South Dakota, DWI official chalk. Meaning if you live in a neighborhood, you can now go to your friend's website and see who's on a DWI in your neighborhood. California, arsonist. Okay, also drug dealer and drug user. We have two more of these things here. Well, what's happening is pretty soon everybody's gonna be on some type of registry. And what I'm seeing with the registries are small, let's take Washington State kidnapping. What's happening with the arsonist registry? These registries, I've looked at them, and I've actually looked at the registries themselves, and you'll see it's all spin off of the sex offender registry. Sex offender registry is used as a template. And these other registries are basically spin offs from them. And also the laws to get on these registries now, it's just like the sex offender registry, starts off as a really dangerous, heavy dude, and then the laws are expanded, like with the sex offender, to the point where public urination can get you on. On nervousness, you now get on this thing for throwing a lit cigarette out of a car, or not putting a campfire out. There's one guy put on it for taking the batteries out of a smoke detector. Okay? The Washington State Kidnapping Registry, Child Custody Checks. So if you have your daughter for the weekend and you decide to keep a little bit longer, now you can go on that registry. I'm predicting about 25 more of these registries pretty soon. Also, and that's what happened in Nazi Germany. If you're a political activist in Nazi Germany, you want to registry. If you're a communist, you want to registry. If you're a Catholic, well, register. If you're a Jehovah's Witness, you want to register. And let's start putting everybody on registries. That's how you control somebody within a constitutional democracy. This is the danger. And like I say, I've said many times that the Jacob Wehrling Law and Megas Law, these are anti-the democratic Trojan laws. Understand how Hitler was able to take down democratic Germany and turn it into national socialism. Everybody that's against him, they got
to put on registers. So moving along, I mean, obviously, you know, sexual offenses happen all the time. I mean, there are some big problems going on. Obviously, in L.A., you had 28 children rescued over this year. You had Operation Rescue in Europe found a 70,000-member-strong, global sex trafficking ring. So if registration and monitoring and notification isn't the solution to that problem, what do you think should be done?
I've always said that you have to look at fads and demons. Either you should go to the mental health professionals or you should go to law enforcement. Okay. At this point, we don't have that. All the cases go to law enforcement and the legal system. As far as sex trafficking, that should go to law enforcement. Okay, so I mean, somebody trying to make money off of pepping out a young girl, this guy needs to do some serious prison time. Okay. Also, the guy that's paying to have, do the wild thing with a 13th, 14th, he needs to do time too. This is criminal activity. Okay. That's my calling on it. And a lot of grandstanding here in San Diego, every year they have a thing called Operation Blue. That's where they'll take all the policemen, they'll take fellow officers, U.S. Marshals, and we'll go to all the houses of all the SOs to knock on the door and check them out. Okay, this is just political grandstanding. You know, they understand that it costs a lot of money. I mean, it's multi-billions of dollars a year to monitor these people, and they have to show they're doing their job. They're always using the fear factor.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things go ahead.
What we got here?
Yeah, and moving along just a little bit. Can you hear me now, sir?
Yeah, I'm still here. So go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, one of the things you brought up in the documentary that's very interesting is that now we're starting to see states use the model laid out for sex offenders for entirely different kind of registries. So can you give us a couple of examples of the non-sexual offender registry states have opened up since Megan's Law came online?
I want to try again. I didn't quite hear you.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the interesting things you brought up in the documentary is that since Megan's Law has come online, states have actually enacted several new registry laws modeled after Megan's Law and other sex offender registration laws. Can you tell us about those and how they, you know, compare to those? Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, one of the interesting things that you mentioned in the documentary is that many states have actually created new laws and new registries modeled on Megan's Law and other sex offender registries. Can you tell us about some of the things states have been doing outside of sexual offenders in terms of regulating and putting people on registrations?
Okay. Well, you know, Shlomo warned me about this. He explained that in Nazi Germany, it started off with the registration of the Jews first. Yeah, that's how it starts off. Basically, Hitler said, "Well, we have to protect German society from these people because they're a danger to children and people." And of course, we have to take them out of a constitutionally protected zone, and, you know, basically, we take away most of their constitutional rights, put them in a a government protection zone, which is a constitutional zone. And we can do whatever we want with them. All right. So this movie was made, me and Shlomo made this 2 years ago, and the new registries have really sneaked. Shlomo said it was going to come, because it happened in Germany, but not in Germany. As it stands now, Utah has the financial fraud registry. It was basically for the Bernie Madoffs. So Utah financial fraud registry, public website. Tennessee, animal cruelty, any kind of cruelty to animal, cruelty to an animal, once again, registration, public website. New York, terrorist website. That's wide open. And, you know, George Washington could have been considered a terrorist. South Dakota, DWI official junk, meaning if you live in a neighborhood, you can now go to your friend's website and see who's on a DWI in your neighborhood. California, arsonist. Okay, also drug dealer and drug user. We have two more of these things here. Well, what's happening is pretty soon everybody's going to be on some type of registry. And what I'm seeing with the registries is, well, this Washington State kidnapping. What's happening with the arsonist registry? These registries, I've looked at them, and I've actually looked at the registry itself, and you'll see it's all spin-off of the sex offender registry. And the sex offender registry is used as a template. And these other registries are basically spin-offs from them. And also the laws to get on these registries now, it's just like the sex offender registry, starts off as a really dangerous, you know, heavy dude, and then the laws are expanded, like with the sex center, to the point where public urination can get you on. On nervousness, you now get all this thing with throwing a lit cigarette out of the car, or not putting a campfire out. There's one guy put on it for taking the batteries out of a smoke detector. Okay? The Washington State Kidnapping Registry, child custody issues. So if you have your daughter for the weekend and you decide to keep a little bit longer, now you go on that registry. I'm predicting. I'm predicting about 25 more of these registries pretty soon. Also, and that's what happened in Nazi Germany. If you're a political activist in Nazi Germany, you want to register. If you're a communist, you want to register. If you're a Catholic, you want to want to register. If you're a Jehovah's Witness, you want to register. Okay, let's start putting everybody on registers. That's how you control somebody within a constitutional democracy. This is a danger. And like I say, I've said many times that the Jacob Wehrling Law and Megas Law, these are anti-democratic Trojan laws. They will take down democratic Germany and turn it into national socialism. Everybody that's against it, they've got to put on registers.
In the documentary, you suggested that Megan's Law and its subsequent legislation and the like will eventually lead to half of all Americans living in what you called government-controlled zones as government-registered citizens. So what exactly do you mean by that?
Well, let's just look at some interesting facts. I mean, I don't make up facts. Everything I say can be Google or documented. Okay. As it stands now, the Center for Missing and Exploited Children, on their website, want to know how many people are on this site. And it's almost 900,000 people. Well, let's break 900,000 or 900,000 people down into the population of America, which is 360 people. That's one in every 300, basically one in every 300 person is on a registry. That breaks down to one person you meet on a daily basis is on this registry. Also, this is the population of a state like, I'm really from Alaska. The population of Alaska is like 700,000 people. Population of Montana, 800,000. Wyoming, 900,000. I mean, basically have, what does make any sense? You have the population of a state, an American state, where everybody in the state has now been taken out of a constitutionally protected zone, meaning when their constitutional rights are violated, they have no legal resource, and they've been placed in a government protection non-constitutional zone where the government says, not says, it dictates where you can live, where you can't live, where you can work, where you can go. You have to report everything about you and what you do in your life to us. I mean, this is Nazi Germany. This is what people went through in Nazi Germany.
Hey, can you tell us a little bit about what it was like promoting your documentary? It seems like you've had some troubles with what you consider censorship. So what's been going on there?
Big time here. There's what I'm saying here is I'm not being billed as telling people things they don't want to hear. Amazon, I didn't realize it was owned by Amazon. It's called IBMD. You know, you've got movie stars. If you're a movie star, you get a list on this, who you are, what you're doing, what's happening. It's kind of like a Facebook for the movie star Hollywood crowd. Okay, I tried to get on it, and they said, no, we're not going to put this up. Then Amazon has a thing called video, where you put videos up. You know, sell your video, download. Okay, Amazon said, no, we're not doing this. So I had to find an independent video downloader where I could actually offer my video for sale to download. It's only a buck. I'm not trying to get rich off this. And a lot of the, I tried to advertise it, and I couldn't advertise it. Do you have any coast-to-coast AM fans out there that like listening to George Norrie, Art Bell? I mean, I'm a fan of this radio show. It comes on late at night. Even they refuse to let me advertise it on your show. There was only one video downloader that would actually accept this. Okay, video, Amazon turned it down. A host of other video places that, you know, where you put a video up and sell it as a download turned it down. I tried to advertise it in newspapers. Wouldn't take a dime for it. And this is really sad. Okay, have you ever heard of a show called Coast to Coast AM? Art Bell, George Norrie comes on late at night.
I've listened to it many, many times.
Well, you're not going to like this. I've listened to this show for about 20 years. I actually personally know Art Bell. All right. That was, I was actually a guest on his show. God, I hate doing this because I love these people. I love these people with that. But Coast to Coast AM, George Norrie, Lisa Lyons, Tom, they all denied me advertising this film on their show, on their radio show. Now, when a business refuses to take your money, especially a show like Coast to Coast AM, just really got me thinking. And like I say, once again, George Norrie, I love you, bro, but, you know, you're wrong on this one, man. You're really wrong, George. You need to look in the mirror and ask yourself, why are you banning this? Anyway, said my piece here. There was a case where someone in Arkansas, a city in Arkansas, saw the film, and he actually flew a Nazi flag off of his house, and the town went ballistic over this. Took it to court, was fighting it. I contacted all the local media in that area, tried to advertise the film, saying, listen, man, this is why he's doing this. And once again, no reply. So what I have is called censorship, what they practice in America, called censorship through omission. And it's alive and well in this country. I can verify it.
Ah, and that's definitely a good go-home note if I ever heard one. Now, we hear it not economically viable. We believe everyone should have an equal opportunity to get their voice heard, no matter how controversial or contentious or countercultural. So if any of our listeners or viewers would like to actually check out your movie or read your books, where should they go?
Well, the movie is www.evillaw.tk. The reason I went with TK, because that's an anonymous URL provider. When you have something controversial, somebody can do if you use it like a .com, somebody can just, who is, find out where you're at. Next thing you know, man, I got creepy people on my lawn. I mean, I got the car with the black tinted windows, with guys in black suits looking at me. At least with TK, I can remain anonymous. So that's what that's for. An American Horror Love Story. I originally put this up on, it's on Amazon, but the trolls, I call them the trolls, just trashed it to death, so I took it over to Scribd, S-C-R-I-B-D, Scribd. So American Horror Love Story, or, you know, Scribd. Now you can Google it. It's become a bestseller on Scribd. Amazon, you know, one of the defects in Amazon putting a book up, if you have something controversial, the troll is trashy, next thing you know, nobody wants to read. Oh, this is, you know. But anyway, if we got any Coast to Coast, any members of the Coast to Coast family, you need to email George Norrie and say, hey, what's going on? Why are you banning this? I emailed Art Bell. He said, well, if I was on, let me tell you, I would have this on there. Of course, you know, he's retired.
Yeah, this is the final question. I just want to give you the final word. You know, just moving forward, I mean, where do you see these laws going in the future? I mean, are we at a point where we're going to start seeing them scaled back a little? Or do you think the public momentum is going to make them more, you know, severe and restrictive as the years go by?
I would say in the next 20 years, the way these registrations are expanding and the way the bar is being lowered on what gets you on these registrations, you'll come home, you'll flip on your computer, and you'll see basically everybody is on some type of registration website in your neighborhood. And it's gonna get like Nazi Germany, where something like 75% of the people were on some type of registration and 25% not. So as it stands now, I predict a future where not being on a government registry will make you kind of weird. You'll be a weird person. You might be on a registry. I mean, basically, doing an interview like this could put you on some type of registry, a future registry.
Well, you know what? At least I got good company, right? Once again, I want to thank you so much for taking time to talk to us today, Mr. Jones. You got your website. The documentary is called Evil Law. Check it out and just do your part to commit thought crime. You know, that's what makes America great. All right.
And contact George Norrie at Coast to Coast AM, man. Give him a piece of your mind for not having me a guest.
Once again, we here at Not Economically Viable would like to thank Anthony Jones for his participation on the program. If you want to check out Jones' movie, you can head on over to evillaw.vhx.tk. And if you're interested in reading some of his published endeavors, all you got to do is type his name into the search bar at scribd.com, and you'll get an eyeful. Scribd or Scribd? Well, either way, you know how to spell it. Don't worry about it. Well, that's all we've got for you this time around. And as always, if you have a particularly unusual, unorthodox, or unpopular view on contentious, controversial and challenging issues and matters, and you don't mind having your opinions thoroughly raked over a public forum, feel free to drop us a line and we might just invite you as a guest on the program. If you like what you hear, do us a favor and subscribe, like, share, forward, and retweet our show. After all, chronicling the slow erosion of social cohesion and normalcy is unquestionably a group project.